Shabbat shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study coming to you live from St. Francisville, Louisiana. Welcome. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, especially because today we are going to wrap up our study of the book of Bamidbar, the book of Numbers. Now, some of you might be really in tune with the annual cycle of readings. And you might think, wait a minute, you can't be finished with the book of Numbers because we still have another parsha to go. Well, as you will see today, the material that I'm going to cover in my class is suitable that I can bring those two final weekend studies together into one. Now, what that's going to mean is that next week, my plan is to give an introductory class to the book of Deuteronomy. So you'll see that this makes sense that I'm doing it this way. So according to the annual cycle of readings, this week, the Torah portion is Pinchas. Now, if you look at the normal cycle of readings, that goes from Numbers 25, verse 10, through Numbers chapter 30 and verse 1. And then next week, we are supposed to cover, if we're strictly following the annual cycle of readings, we're supposed to follow two small Torah portions known as Matot and Maaseh. Matot and Maaseh. And those readings are often combined. In this week, in my teaching, I'm pulling three together. It'll make sense. Bear with me. I promise you it'll make sense. So, again, welcome. And I'm looking forward to next week beginning the Deuteronomy, but I'm excited about this week because I have, I think, something quite informative. Okay, so last week we talked about this seer by the name of Balaam, B-A-L-A-A-M in English, pronounced Balaam in Hebrew. And we talked about the story of Balaam and how it's interesting that not only is Balaam an important figure in the book of Bamidbar, but he finds a place, his story finds a place in the Pentateuch, in the prophets, and then it's also in the writings. So we find Balaam covered, his story at least is mentioned in all three sections of the Hebrew Bible. Beyond that, he's mentioned also in the Christian New Testament and in the Quran. So Balaam is this pretty popular figure. As you recall, last week we also talked about the fact that at a dig site known as De'er Allah, there was an inscription found that is at least remembering a local folk hero, maybe. It was painted on the wall in this particular building. We remember that Balaam is known for his prophetic utterances. He was hired by Balak of Moab to curse, but ultimately his curse was turned into a blessing. So we know all of this material about Balaam. Now, we're not finished with Balaam. We're going to touch on a little bit of Balaam's story again this week, but it's not the main focus of my teaching today. Since the book of Numbers, you know, I'm always trying to find our place in the text in both in terms of chronology, as well as, you know, where we are not only in time, but geography. So I want to place us on the map and in the right time. So if you'll open your Bible with me to the book of Numbers, chapter 21. Numbers, chapter 21. And I want to show you that in Numbers 21, we arrive at our final stop, basically. So if you go to 21 and verse 18, I'm going to pick it up in the second half of verse 18. And it says, and from Midbar to Matanah, from Matanah to Nahaliel, from Nahaliel to Bamot, from Bamot to the valley that is in the country of Moab, at the peak of Pisgah, overlooking the wasteland. Now, this phrase, overlooking the wasteland, is going to be important. We're going to come back to that. So we're in the country of Moab, and it's from this location, which I'm going to really stress, is sort of the final staging ground before the children of Israel enter into the promised land. So here they are in this particular area near Pisgah, overlooking the wasteland, as it's called in some translation. In Hebrew, it's the Yeshimot. We'll talk about that. But it's from this final staging ground that an occupation, if you will, takes place on the east side of the Jordan. So I didn't have my map up this time because it's not as helpful for what I want to do today. But from this final staging ground, they launch a campaign, Transjordan, on the east side of the Jordan, and they battle, as you'll see, towards the end of 21. We've already covered this material. But they battle against Yazer. They dispossess the Amorite. Remember, Sihon the king. It's mentioned here. It's also mentioned in Deuteronomy and elsewhere. And some of the Israelites dwell in that land of the Amorites. So a lot of people tend to think that the inheritance, the allotments, don't begin until after the Torah or after the Pentateuch, but they actually begin on the east side of the Jordan as the story unfolds. So we have some people taking possession of what was the land of the Amorites. And then they go even further north, probably a contingent, goes even further north into the Bashan, where they defeat Og and the people, leaving no remnant, it says, interestingly enough, and they take possession of that land. So the children of Israel are occupying this territory. I know that's a heated political word these days, but they are taking possession of, might be a better way to put it. And so that's where we find ourselves in 21. Now look at verse 1 of chapter 22. The Israelites, meaning after they defeat Og and Sihon, says the Israelites then marched on and encamped in the steppes of Moab across the Jordan from Jericho. Now, there are various ways to translate this. In some translations, it's going to say in the plains of Moab. I think in the Jewish Study Bible here in the JPS, it says the steppes of Moab. But what I want you to understand is this is the low-lying territory. If you've ever been to this region around the Salt Sea or the Sea of the Arava, remember what people often refer to it as the Dead Sea, not a biblical term, but on the edges of this sea, there are low-lying areas. It's called, we talked about the Arava, from all the way, technically all the way from the Kinneret, the Sea of Galilee, all the way down that rift is a low-lying area. On either side, there are mountainous regions. So they're in the steppes, but in the Hebrew, it's the Aravot. So they're in the Aravot of Moab. Aravot meaning the plains or the low-lying areas. Now, this area here, remember we read in 21 that they've already arrived in this area, so they're around Pisgah and these places that we've named. This is where the saga or the story of Bilam takes place. You know, this seer. Now look with me at chapter 24 of the book of Numbers, chapter 24, and I want to go to verse 25. This is after, chronologically in the text, this is after the encounter where Bilam is supposed to curse four times, but he turns all of those into blessings, or God does, however you want to look at that. Verse 25 of chapter 24. Then Bilam, set out on his journey back home, and Balak also went his way. Now, the thing about this is, it seems like the story is over. We've had Bilam has been called to do his thing. He does what he does. And here it just says he goes home. In fact, in the Hebrew, it says, Vayacham Bilam, Vayelek, Vayashav, Lemichmo. It says that he arose, Bilam arose, and he went, and he returned to his place. So, according to the Hebrew and most English translations, story's over. That's it. Now, his work is done. Israel is blessed and not cursed. He has secured his place in every section of the Hebrew Bible, Torah, prophets, writings. He's earned a place in the New Testament. He didn't know it then, but he did. He's earned a place in the Quran. And he even would earn a memorial plaque on the wall of a building at Deir Allah. And as far as the story goes, he could have lived happily ever after. His words are chanted in synagogues every Sabbath. It's turned into a beautiful song that most of you know. But for one small detail. Had he simply returned to his home, had he actually gone straight home, everything would have been fine. But as you will see, according to the writers, it's not what he did. Now, our story today, I leave you at that point. We'll pick him back up in a moment. But at this point, we read, if we're following the text, it seems that this saga has closed the door and we're opening up a new one. Bilam is on his way home. Balak goes back to the house to tell the children and wife that he's done with this guy, Bilam. And our story picks up this week at a place called Shittim. Shittim, which is the word for acacia. In fact, you'll see it's called Avel Shittim in another place we're going to read. But this is in that Arava region, the Aravot Moav. It's in the low-lying place between the mountainous region. We're on the northeastern shore of the Arava Sea. And Shittim is very important to our story. So the story picks up, we're right there. If we look slightly to the east, we're going to see, if I'm facing north and I look to the east, I'm going to see, the areas that we've been talking about, and Heshbon, and to the north, the areas that the children of Israel went and did battle against Og of Bashan. But now they're at this the final staging place before they cross over westerly into the land. This is the final stop before they enter the promised land. I want to go through a few verses. Go with me to Numbers 33. Numbers 33. Now, Numbers 33 is a travel itinerary. Now, if some of you feel like, well, wow, I really wanted to go through all of that because Ross has already said we're going to jump into Deuteronomy beginning next week. All of these chapters that, I'm teaching a good bit from these final chapters today, but a lot of this comes back in when we do Deuteronomy, so you're not going to miss anything. So Numbers 33, beginning in verse 48, this is the travel itinerary. It says, they set out from the hills of Abarim and encamped in the steppes of Moab. All right, so that's where we are. At the Jordan, near Jericho. Now remember, they're on the east side of the Jordan Rift, and directly due west of Shittim is Jericho. Verse 49, they encamped by the Jordan from Beit Yeshimot as far as Avel Shittim in the steppes of Moab. So I just mentioned that place, Avel Shittim. Is Shittim. Avel means sort of a, what's the word? Not orchard, but like a grove of acacia. And if you've ever been in this region, all of that deserty region around the Salt Sea, the Arava Sea, is filled with these acacia trees. All right, verse 50. In the Arvot Moab, in the steppes of Moab, at the Jordan near Jericho, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the Israelite people and say to them, when you cross the Jordan into the land of Canaan. So I just want to show you that they're there. They're near Jericho. They're due east of Jericho, across the Jordan Rift. And God is communicating to Moses. Now listen, when Israel crosses over, so they're at the final. This, by the way, I want to make sure you understand, the end of the Torah story is what I'm covering right now. And you might be thinking, wait a minute, we have a whole nother book. We have a whole other book. How could you possibly be at the end? The Torah ends, by the way, with the children of Israel poised to enter into the promised land. Moses has been told he's not going to cross, right? Joshua is appointed the headship to bring them across into the land. The final communications from God to Moses in terms of legal matters are given here at Shittim, and then the only thing that's left is for Moses to die. We're going to cover all of that today, but not in the book of Deuteronomy, in the book of Numbers. This is the end of the story. Stick with me. Now, go with me to Joshua, just to show you this Shittim location is the final ground on the east side before they enter. So if we go to Joshua chapter 2, verse 1, Joshua the son of Nun secretly sent two spies from Shittim, saying, go reconnoiter the region of Jericho. Remember the story as Joshua begins. The children of Israel are under the headship of Joshua, and Joshua says, I need two spies. I'm going to send two spies into Jericho. Where is he at when he does that? He's at Shittim. See, this is the final point on the east side of the Jordan before they take possession of the land. Look at chapter 3, verse 1. Joshua. Early next morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and marched to the Jordan. They didn't cross immediately, but spent the night there. So I want you to find these places on your map because it's very important. This is the crossing point. A lot of people are confused, like when we talk about the Exodus out of Egypt. That's a little unclear. In other words, people say you get some really good students of the Bible who look at the Exodus from Egypt. And when you look at the exit point, there's some ambiguity. We don't know. Was it here? Was it here? Was it slightly to the north? Did they go this way? Did they go that way? But there's no question, there's no doubt, according to the writers of the biblical narratives, where Israel crosses into the land. This is where I always want to go. And if I were to do some type of archaeological work, this would be one of my favorite places to check because according to the text, it's beyond dispute that the Israelites were here in this area. And if we're talking about 600,000 plus men, plus women, children, etc., you would think that there might be some evidence there archaeologically. Okay. Now, the next text I want to look at, if you'll go with me to Micah, to the prophet Micah, and I just want to pick up one verse there, Micah chapter 6. And Micah chapter 6 and verse 5. And it says, my people, remember what Balak, king of Moab, plotted against you and how Balaam, son of Beor, responded to him. Recall your passage from Shittim to Gilgal and you will recognize the gracious acts of the Lord. And that's the JPS. The Hebrew there talks about the same. It's basically the same, but it says, from Shittim to Gilgal, and you'll know the righteousnesses of Jehovah. So there, something happens between Shittim to Gilgal, which, by the way, this is a confirmation that the passage into the land is Shittim to Gilgal. Now, what we want to know is, what was it that took place in this particular area? The final days. This is the final stop on the east side. Now, by this point, just so you know in the story what's going on, Miriam is dead. Aaron is dead. They died west of the Jordan Rift, despite what tour guides will tell you today. They might have a snow cone shop and a touristy trap place on the east side of the Jordan that says, this is Aaron's grave, and you tell them, well, that's not biblical. Thank you very much. Aaron and Miriam are dead, as well as all of those who were sentenced to die in the wilderness. They're all dead now. And you go, wow, how many people are there? It's about the same number of people, because there's a census in this week's portion where they count again the 20 years old and up, and instead of 603,550, I think it's 601,000 some odd people, men, at this point. But all those others are dead except for Joshua and Caleb. And go with me for validation of that. Look at Numbers chapter 26. Numbers chapter 26. And let's look at verse 63. Numbers 26, 63. And it says, these are the persons enrolled by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who registered the Israelites on the steps of Moab at the Jordan near Jericho. By the way, this is right after the new census, which, by the way, it's 601,730 males now at this point in the story. Verse 64, among these, there was not one of those enrolled by Moses and Aaron the priest when they recorded the Israelites in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall die in the wilderness. Not one of them survived except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. So this is sort of the final statement after the census. It says, look, there's 601,750 males now, and that doesn't include any of those that were part of the 603,550 back at Sinai, with the exception of Joshua and Caleb. Okay, so I just want you to understand that the children of Israel, they're poised to enter. They're so close. They're this close. Almost there. But that wouldn't make a very good story. I mean, it would be, if that's it, no, wait, we have more to go. Like I said, they're ready to. It's one more day. Here we go. Chapter 25 of the book of Numbers. While Israel was staying at Shittim. Now look, back up one verse so you get where we are. Balaam set out on his journey back home, and Balak also went his way. Close that door, open the next, and it says, when Israel was staying at Shittim, the people profaned themselves by prostituting with the Moabite women who invited the people to the sacrifices for their God. The people partook of them and worshiped that God. Thus Israel attached itself to Baal Peor, and the Lord was incensed with Israel. So I don't mean to go on and on, but they were almost there, and now they're having sexual relations with Moabite women. And if that's not bad enough, they're also bowing to their god, za, plural, and they're eating sacrifices to these gods of the Moabite women. Just sort of notice that's only three verses. Tells what's going on there. So they're prostituting with the women, sacrificing, they're eating and bowing to their gods. And then the way the Hebrew puts it, Israel is yoked to Baal Peor, and Jehovah was angered against Israel. Now, Baal is a Northwest Semitic deity, is the best way to put it. If you study that region, all over that region in the ancient world, Baal, sometimes it's associated with Hadad and these other gods, but Baal, it's this Semitic word Baal means Lord or master or owner. And this particular deity takes different shapes and forms, I guess I could say, throughout that region. In this region where they're at, Peor is a geographical location. So the god, the local god, this is like a county god, you know. It's just a small, this Baal of Peor is right here. Here's Peor. Well, who's the god of this area? Well, Baal of Peor. So what Israel has done is they've linked themselves to this deity in this particular place. Look with me at Numbers 23, verse 28. And it says, Balak took Bilam to the peak of Peor, which overlooks the wasteland. There's that phrase again, overlooks the wasteland. Yeshemot in Hebrew. So what I want to show you is that Israel has linked themselves to the Baal of Peor, where Peor is the place. So the Lord or the owner or the master deity of that place is what they're having these orgies and these sacrificial meals and all of that stuff. Okay, so let's look at Baal Peor. There are several passages which deal with Baal Peor. Look with me. We did chapter 25. Go back to Numbers 25. Let's touch it on the way out. We see in verse 3, Israel attached itself to Baal Peor. And then verse 5, so Moses said to Israel's officials, each of you slay those of his men who attached themselves to Baal Peor. So Baal Peor is the deity of the region. Baal Peor. Peor is the region. Baal Peor is the god of the region. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy 4 and verse 3. Deuteronomy 4, 3. You saw with your own eyes what the Lord did in the matter of Baal Peor. In other words, in the thing, you know, the thing about the deity of Peor, that Jehovah your God wiped out from among you every person who followed Baal Peor. You see that? And then those that didn't do this are alive to this day. Okay, now look at Hosea. Go all the way to Hosea. I want to show you what a big deal this is for the biblical writers. Hosea 9 and verse 10. This is God speaking based on what we see here. I found Israel as pleasing as grapes in the wilderness. Your fathers seemed to me like the first fruit to ripen on a fig tree. But when they came to Baal Peor, they turned aside to shamefulness. Then they became as detested as they had been loved. Let me tell you something. Whatever happened at Baal Peor was on such a grand scale, such a depraved state of things that was going on, that the prophets are talking about it in the 9th century BCE. We're talking hundreds of years later. Look at Psalm 106. Psalm 106. And this ties into our reading today as well. Psalm 106, verse 28. They attached themselves to Baal Peor. 8 sacrifices offered to the dead. They provoked anger by their deeds, and a plague broke out among them. Pinchas stepped forth and intervened, and the plague ceased. And it was reckoned to his merit for all generations to eternity. So it was considered righteousness, what Pinchas did. Now, Pinchas, that's the name of this week's Torah portion, because Pinchas is a major part of this. Now, we also have Beit Peor is mentioned a few times, and I'm just going to give you these passages because I want to focus on something else. But Beit Peor, Deuteronomy 3:29, Deuteronomy 4:46, and Joshua 13:20. All of it deals with the location, but it's the focus that I want to take is the matter of Peor and turning to the deity of Peor is what really brings about the wrath. Now, in one passage, look in Joshua 22, it's even called the sin or the iniquity of Peor. So this is my class today. I'm focusing on the iniquity of Peor according to our sources. Look at Joshua 22, verse 17. Is the sin of Peor, which brought a plague upon the community of the Lord, such a small thing to us? We have not cleansed ourselves from it to this very day. This is a little bit after the incident, but they're still saying, we're still suffering the effects of that. And that's an interesting chapter, by the way, but I'm not going to get into it today. So Peor is a place that is associated with an act of devotion to Moabite deities. Worship that took place near Shittim and toward the end of the 40 years, actually at the very end, with a new generation of people. So it's not the same ones that set up the cow and bowed and worshiped and danced and did. These are their children. That generation is dead. Now, look with me once at Numbers 23 and verse 28. 23:28. Balak took Balaam to the peak of Peor, which overlooks the wasteland. Now, again, wasteland is Yeshimon or Yeshimot, depending, looking at the different places where it occurs. It means the wasteland, and Peor overlooks this. This is a peak in Peor that overlooks this place. Now, there's only one other occurrence of this particular phrase, and I want to look at that too because it helps us to identify a certain location where we are. One second, let me look at this. Go to Numbers 21:20. And from Bamot to the valley that is in the country of Moab at the peak of Pisgah, overlooking the wasteland. Yeshimon, the wasteland. Okay. Overlooking the wasteland is a phrase that is used in both of these texts. It's identical in the Hebrew. And what I'm bringing to your attention is that Pisgah is Peor. Now, the reason that's important is because at the very end of the Torah story, these places will come back around. So the sin or the devotion to Moab's gods becomes known as the matter of Peor. Now, to this point, everything we've talked about suggests that these are Moabite women. Moabite women, the land of Moab, Moabite gods. Everything is Moab, 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 Moab. Now, what led to the matter of Peor? How was it that the children of Israel get pulled into this trap of the bad things that they did? Let's just keep it PG. The bad things that they did, what was it that enticed them? How was it that they ended up doing this? Look at Numbers chapter 31. Numbers chapter 31 and verse 16. Yet they are the very ones who at the bidding of Balaam induced the Israelites to trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor, so that the Lord's community was struck by a plague. Wait a minute. The bidding of Balaam? Now, this is interesting because if Balaam would have just gone home like the text says he was doing in Numbers, where we just talked about in Numbers chapter 24, it says he arose and walked to his place. But it seems, at least according to this writer, that on his way out, he gave a plan to these women, and the plan worked. Now, we don't have that whole story. All we have in the biblical text is just a brief mention that, like it says right here, at the bidding or at the word of Balaam, they induced the Israelites to trespass against the Lord. So it means that what happened at Peor was the idea given to these people by Balaam. Now, last week after the class, I received a phone call from my friend Timothy Thompson. And he said, "Hey, man, have you read the story of Balaam and all of that from Josephus?" And I said, "I don't think I ever have." And so I want to bring Josephus in just for part of this. And this is from the Antiquities of the Jews, book 4, chapter 6. Book 4, chapter 6, Antiquities of the Jews. But Balak, being very angry that the Israelites were not cursed, sent away Balaam without thinking him worthy of any honor. Now, remember, if we're going to put this, align this with the biblical text, if you choose to, then this is going to be about where it says Balaam went his way. Numbers chapter 24, verse 45, right? So that's just, or 24, 25. But so here it says, whereupon when he was upon his journey in order to pass the Euphrates, he sent for Balak and for the princes of the Midianites and spake thus to them, "O Balak and you Midianites that are here present, for I am obliged even without the will of God to gratify you. It is true, no entire destruction can seize upon the nation of the Hebrews, neither by war, nor by plague, nor by scarcity of the fruits of the earth, nor can any other unexpected accident be their entire ruin. For the providence of God is concerned to preserve them from such a misfortune. Nor will it permit any such calamity to come upon them whereby they may all perish. But some small misfortunes, and those for a short time whereby they may appear to be brought low, may still befall them. But after that, they'll flourish again to the terror of those that brought those mischiefs upon them. So that if you have a mind to gain a victory over them for a short space of time, you'll obtain it by following my word." All right, you ready? This, according to Josephus, is it right? I don't know, but it's a story passed down historically by the traditionally, according to Josephus. Here's what he tells the Moabites and the Midianites that were there together. Do you therefore set out the handsomest of such of your daughters as are most eminent for beauty and proper to force and conquer the modesty of those that behold them? These decked and trimmed to the highest degree you are able. Then you send them to be near the Israelites' camp and give them in charge that when the young men of the Hebrews desire their company, they allow it. And when they see that they are enamored of them, let them take their leave. And if they entreat them to stay, let them not give their consent, etc. It goes on. It says, leave off their obedience. Okay, so what? Let me paraphrase part of this and you can read it later. Part of the story is, he says, listen, once the men fall for these beautiful women, now you have to put the hottest ones up there by the Israelite camp, the most beautiful, they're going to entice these guys. The guys are going to fall for it. When they do bring them in and the men are hooked, then the women, this is Josephus according to Ross, I'm paraphrasing. Then when you got them, what you're going to do is you're going to say, now listen, boys, you want me to be your wife? And they're going to say, yes, yes, we want you, we want you. Well, here's what you have to do then. You can't expect us to go with you if you don't worship our gods and participate in our sacrifices. Now, these boys have fallen, they're smitten. And that's what brings it about, at least according to Josephus. Now, it's very long. It goes into quite a bit, but you'll see as you work your way through that the Midianites. Now, what's strange is both within the text of the Bible and within Josephus, they're faced with the same problem. The matter of Peor is about the Moabites. But all of a sudden in the story, you have the Midianites. Now, it's not that the book of Numbers doesn't have those together at times, but it strangely shifts. So like in Josephus, just like in the Bible, where you did have Moabite, the women of Moab, the daughters of Moab, no mention of Midianites. It was all about Moab. And then all of a sudden, it's these Midianite women. Now, I have some theories. We're not going to go into all of that at the time, but it is certainly of interest. Now, what we have in Numbers 25 is that another story comes into the tale. You've already got the matter of Peor going on. You've got the bad things with the daughters of Moab, not Midian, Moab. And then you have this story that comes in about a Midianite woman. Now remember, Moses, these are Moses' in-laws. Moses' father-in-law is a Midianite priest. Moses' woman, Zipporah, is Midianite. So these are her people. And a Midianite woman is brought into the camp, and that is the story in Numbers 25. We'll go there. Not going to read the whole story, but this is the story of Pinchas. And you'll recall, let's see, verse 6 of chapter 25. Just then, one of the Israelites came and brought a Midianite woman over to his companions in the sight of Moses and of the whole Israelite community who were weeping at the entrance of the tent of meeting. When Pinchas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, saw this, he left the assembly and taking a spear in his hand, he followed the Israelite into the chamber and stabbed both of them, the Israelite and the woman, through the belly. And then the plague against the Israelites was checked. Those who died of the plague numbered 24,000. All right, this story is strange for a lot of reasons. One, prior to this, there's no mention of a plague. It's just the plague stops, but the plague isn't mentioned prior to its stopping. Now, we assume that the matter of Peor brought about a plague by reading the earlier verses, chapter 25, verses 1 through 4 or 5, but there's no mention of a plague there. Jonah pointed this out to me when we were going through this in great detail. In Numbers, prior to this, it's the daughters of Moab who entice the men of Israel. The matter of Peor is always tied to the Moabites. The story of Pinchas relates a single Midianite woman. You might say, well, you're being too careful with this, but I want to be careful. I want to look at it. Moabite, Moabite, and then there's this one Midianite woman, and it says, look with me at chapter 25, verse 14. The name of the Israelite who was killed, the one who was killed with the Midianite woman, one Midianite woman, was Zimri, the son of Salu, chieftain of a Simeonite ancestral house. The name of the Midianite woman who was killed was Cozbi, daughter of Zur. He was the tribal head of an ancestral house in Midian. Just like Moses' wife, Zipporah's father is head of an ancestral house. So this is an interesting story. Now, what happens is that, look at verse 16. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, assail the Midianites and defeat them. For they assailed you by the trickery they practiced against you because of the affair of Peor and because of the affair of their kinswoman, Cozbi, daughter of the Midianite chieftain, who was killed at the time of the plague on account of Peor. What I want you to notice is now the whole focus becomes the Midianites. Moabites aren't even mentioned anymore. Now, in Josephus recognizes this and shifts the story to the Midianites, but the book of Numbers does not. The book of Numbers has this one Midianite woman, and because of this act, we see this assail the Midianites. Now, this is carried out in chapter 31. Go with me to 31. The assailing of the Midianites takes place in 31. Ready? Chapter 31, verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, avenge the Israelite people on the Midianites, then you shall be gathered to your kin. Now, what I want you to notice is this is the last thing Moses is to do before he dies. Now, remember, we still have chapters left in Numbers and the whole book of Deuteronomy, but I want you to understand this assailing of the Midianites is at the end. Excuse me. Verse 3, Moses spoke to the people, saying, let men be picked out from among you for a campaign. Let them fall upon Midian to wreak the Lord's vengeance on Midian. By the way, where would Midian be? Where are they? People want to put Midian, a little bitty dot on the map in Saudi Arabia, so that they can put their Sinai there. Right? Everybody do this. Yes, that's correct. So think about that. They're going to go to Midian on a campaign. This whole thing is taking place right there. You shall dispatch, verse 4, on the campaign 1,000 from every one of the tribes of Israel. So 1,000 from each tribe were furnished from the divisions of Israel, 12,000 picked for the campaign. Moses dispatched them on the campaign, 1,000 from each tribe, with Pinchas, the son of Eleazar, serving as a priest on the campaign, equipped with the sacred utensils, the trumpets for sounding the blast. They took the field against Midian, not in Saudi Arabia, as the Lord had commanded Moses, and they slew every male. Among them, along them, with their other victims, they slew the kings of Midian. Evi, Rechem, Zur, Hur, Reba, the five kings of Midian. They also put Balaam, the son of Beor, to the sword. Israelites took the women and children of the Midianite captives and seized as booty all their beasts, all their herds, all their wealth, and they destroyed by fire all the towns in which they were settled and their encampments, and they gathered all the spoil and all the booty, man and beast. They brought the captives and the booty and the spoil to Moses, Eleazar the priest, and the whole Israelite community at the camp in the steppes of Moab at the Jordan near Jericho. A little bit more. Moses, Eleazar the priest, and all the chieftains of the community came out to meet them outside the camp. Moses became angry with the commanders of the army, the officers of thousands and officers of hundreds who had come back from the military campaign. Moses said to them, "You've spared every female. Yet they are the very ones who at the bidding of Balaam induced the Israelites to trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor, so that the Lord's community was struck by a plague. Now therefore, slay every male among the children and slay also every woman who has known a man carnally, but spare every young woman who has not had carnal relations with a man." And then they have to stay outside the camp. You know the story. Question is, why the slaying of the Midianites? Now, if the answer to that for you is, well, we just read the deal with Pinchas. But the story of the Midianites seems to intrude on a story that started with the Moabites, unless, and we don't have this in the text, but unless there is a clear indication that Moabites and Midianites are together, in which case that brings up geography questions too, so we could talk about that later. But the Midianites, I've often put forward that Midianites are, you won't find them like the land of Midian is a single place on the map, like the people who want the Saudi Arabian Sinai. But you, because you find them all over the place. They're like the Bedouin. Midian, Bedouin are people of the desert. Bedouin in the desert. Now, we find them, we get them confused elsewhere in the Bible too. Go with me to Genesis 37. Poor Midianites, man. They always get the blame because they're around. You know, you got Midianites there. All right, 37. Now, the context is Joseph is in the pit, right? And they set down, verse 25, Genesis 37, 25. Then they set down to a meal. Looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Everybody say, Ishmaelites. Their camels bearing gum, balm, and ladanum to be taken to Egypt. And Judah said to his brothers, "What do we gain by killing our brother and covering up his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites." Everybody say Ishmaelites. "But let us not do away with him ourselves. After all, he's our brother, our own flesh." Brothers agreed. And when the Midianite traders passed by, the Midianites, wait a minute. Looking up, I see Ishmaelites, 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 and then the Midianite traders. Well, you say, well, maybe it's another group. You're looking, you see the Ishmaelites coming, and then here come the Midianites. Just so happened that they're both crossing. That could be. Stick with me. When the Midianite traders passed by, they pulled Joseph up out of the pit. They sold Joseph for 20 pieces of silver to the Ishmaelites, who brought Joseph to Egypt. You go, okay, I get it now. They see Ishmaelites, Midianites come, pull Joseph out, sell him to the Ishmaelites you saw coming in the first place. All right? So who brings the Joseph to Egypt? The Ishmaelites. Now look at verse 36. The Midianites, meanwhile, sold him in Egypt to Potiphar. So my point being that often we find these stories come together and we have different details, some proposed from different sources, One source originally told the story according to the Ishmaelite traders. The other was the Midianites. And in fact, that last reference calls them Midianites in the Hebrew. Midianites. It's a slightly different spelling. But the Midianites get linked in this story with what was originally the matter of Peor was about the Moabites. What it seems to me is that some ancient original source had a clear idea that together you had Moabite women and Midianite women together in this trickery against the children of Israel. Now, there is one text, which I believe is ancient, that does actually do just that. Listen to this. And we turned and we set out toward the Negev, and we dwelled in front of Beit Peor. And the daughters of Moab went forth at that time, and the women of Midian to meet you. By the way, there's no other text that has this like this. And they called to you to eat from their sacrifices, and you ate from their sacrifices, and you drank from their libations, and you bowed to their gods, and you whored with the Midianite women, and you were joined to Baal Peor in that day. And the anger of Elohim burned upon you, and he plagued a great plague against you at that time. And I sent men from you to battle the Midianites, and you smote them with the edge of the sword. You captured from them very many captives, and the plague was restrained. And this text answers a lot of the problems that we find in the biblical text. In this text, you have Midianites and Moabite women together that set up the trap for the Israelites. Not only that, it says that brings on a plague. In the book of Numbers, there is no bringing a plague. It just says the plague was stopped. This text, interestingly enough, is the text that was found in the Moses scroll. I leave that for what it's worth. Now, Moses' last act, per the book of Numbers, is this attack on the Midianites. Go with me one more time. Let's look at Numbers 25. Numbers 25, verse 16. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Assail the Midianites and defeat them, for they assailed you by the trickery they practiced against you because of the affair of Peor, and because of the affair of their kinswoman, Cozbi, daughter of the Midianite chief, who was killed at the time of the plague on account of Peor." Now look at chapter 31, Numbers 31, verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Avenge the Israelite people on the Midianites, then you shall be gathered to your people." So the last thing that Moses is going to do in the story of the Torah is avenge the Midianites. Now look at chapter 27 of Numbers, 27 and verse 12. The Lord said to Moses, now remember, we're in the book of Numbers, 27:12. "Ascend the heights of Avarim and view the land that I have given to the Israelite people. When you've seen it, you too shall be gathered to your kin, just as your brother Aaron was. For in the wilderness of Zin, when the community was contentious, you disobeyed my command to uphold my sanctity in their sight by means of the water. These are the waters of Meribat Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin." Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, "Let the Lord, the source of the breath of all flesh, appoint someone over the community who shall go out before them and come in before them, and who shall take them out and bring them in, so that the Lord's community may not be like sheep that have no shepherd." And Jehovah answered Moses, Single out Joshua, son of Nun, an inspired man, and lay your hands on him. Have him stand before Eleazar the priest and before the whole community and commission him in their sight. Invest him with some of your authority so that the whole Israelite community may obey. But he shall present himself to Eleazar the priest, who shall on his behalf seek the decision of the Urim. We're going to talk about the Urim at some point. Before Jehovah. And by such instruction they shall go out, and by such instruction they shall come in, he and all the Israelites, the whole community. Now, when does this happen? Moses is looking out over, and he's told, go appoint Joshua. Now, listen, verse 22. Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He took Joshua, had him stand before Eleazar the priest and before the whole community. He laid his hands on him and commissioned him as the Lord had spoken through Moses. The Midianites are destroyed. Moses has already followed up on appointing Joshua his successor. What's left? All right. Chapter 28 and 29 are offerings. Chapters dealing with legal matter about offerings. And you have to ask yourself, Amos chapter 5, verse 25. You know, did you offer offerings in the wilderness? You have to think about Jeremiah chapter 7 and verse 21 through 25. That God says that when they left Egypt, he never commanded them concerning sacrifices and offerings. But be that as it may, 28 and 29 deal with offerings. Chapter 30 deals with vows. Chapter 31 is part of the continuation of chapter 25, which it seems to interrupt with these other texts. But interestingly enough, 25 says, avenge yourself on the Midianites. 31, they avenge themselves on the Midianites. Chapter 32 deals with the allotment of the Transjordan region to the 2.5 tribes. Remember, they said, hey, can we just stay here? This is cattle land. We have a lot of cattle. Chapter 33 is a travel itinerary. We're going to talk about that throughout the text as we get into Deuteronomy, because Deuteronomy also has a travel itinerary. Verse 50 of chapter 33 picks up more of the land allotments that were in chapter 32. I'm just going through these high level, as you notice. 35, 34, and 35 deal with allotment of the land. 36 is this story about the daughters of Zelophehad. The daughters of Zelophehad come to Moses, and they said, hey, look, our dad, we don't have, there are no boys. And our father wasn't involved in the rebellion against Moses, so what about our descendants in terms of having, something to pass on to them. And of course, God says that they had a good point. So they changed the statute so that there are certain exceptions to the rule. If a father has no sons, and you can read those in chapter 36. But I want to look at now Numbers 36 and verse 13. This is the end of the book of Numbers. Listen to what it says. These are the commandments and regulations that the Lord enjoined upon the Israelites through Moses on the steps of Moab at the Jordan near Jericho. Now, this seems like an appropriate ending to the story. Why do I say that? Israel is at the place of the crossing. They're not going to move again. The only place the Israelites move from where they are now is across the Jordan. They've been given instructions for life in the land. They have that. The Torah's been given. They understand, they've been told, they've got all the instructions and so forth. The 40-year wilderness journey is over. They've done 40 years. The generation that was sentenced to die in the wilderness, except for Joshua and Caleb, that whole generation is dead. The vengeance that had to be taken against the Moabites, the final act that God tells Moses he has to do before he dies, is done. Joshua has to be appointed the successor. He has been. Moses has to lay his hands on Joshua in the sight of the people. He's done that. Moses has to know that he's not going to cross over, but that he's going to die. He can view the land, but he's going to... That's all happened. Now go with me to Deuteronomy 34. Deuteronomy 34. And I want to read, beginning in verse 1, Moses went up from the steppes of Moab. Where are we at in our story in Numbers? Steppes of Moab. To Mount Nebo, to the summit of Pisgah. Same place, right? Opposite Jericho, and Jehovah showed him the whole land. Gilead as far as Dan, all Naphtali, the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, the whole land of Judah, as far as the western sea, the Negev, the plain, the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. And the Lord said to him, "This is the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will assign it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your own eyes, but you will not cross over there." Does that sound like Numbers that we just read? Listen. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab at the command of the Lord. He buried him in the valley in the land of Moab near Beit Peor, and no one knows his burial place to this day. It's the other reason I want to do archaeology there. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eyes were undimmed and his vigor unabated, and Israel bewailed Moses in the steppes of Moab for 30 days. And let's see, the period of wailing and mourning for Moses came to an end. Now Joshua, son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom because Moses had laid his hands on him, and the Israelites heeded him, doing as the Lord had commanded Moses. If you have, this is the book of Numbers, this is the book of Deuteronomy. I just pulled those together to show you that the book of Numbers is aligned, chapter 27 is aligned with Deuteronomy 34. Remember 27, Moses, go up on the mountain and look out over the land, and I'm going to tell you, well, that's what Deuteronomy 34 says. So here's the thing. If that's the case, and we're at the end, the only thing that hasn't happened yet is Moses hasn't died. And by the way, Deuteronomy 34 includes Moses' death, but Deuteronomy, the question is, what is Deuteronomy? Now, I know a lot of people say, well, it's a record of his absolute final speeches. Is it? Is it necessary? Is it different, or is it the same? You know, the theory that won out for a very long time, and some people still think that is, Deuteronomy is just a repeating of things we already know. But as you will see, I'm going to teach Deuteronomy. This is my favorite book of the Bible. I'm going to teach Deuteronomy like you have never heard it. I'm going to show you in Deuteronomy that Deuteronomy is not and should not and cannot be considered this book that is late. Most scholars say it's the latest of the books. It comes in the 7th century BCE. It's called by scholars a pious fraud, a forgery. Deuteronomy is going to be shown to be the singular most important book in all of the Bible. We're going to work through this beginning next week on a series on Deuteronomy. These are the words of Moses. Don't you miss this one. Join me next week, same time, same channel. Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov.